Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Welcome along and a happy new year from the D Word podcast and the second part of my look back on some of the highlights of 2023. Coming up, I'm going to be revisiting the innovative Philo project, hearing about the positive benefits of golf, table tennis and drumming, celebrating our 200th edition and hearing what government should be doing to implement the recommendations of the latest World Alzheimer's Report. Now, the traditional model of daycare involves people travelling to a hall-type setting for a half day or a day, but not in the southwest of the UK, where the Philo project has turned that on its head by offering daycare in cosy family settings, as I found out when I chatted to co-founder Libby Bryce.
We employ hosts. They're not volunteers. We're very clear that people working in the work, doing the work we do, should not just be regarded as volunteers. In order to be sustainable, we need people to be committed, not just intentionally, but, you know, to be working with us. So they're paid very well. They have 6 weeks holiday a year. So they have really good, it's a very good employment. But what they do in their job is they will, in their own home, host small groups for the day. And they will provide the transport for that group where they can. So if somebody is not able to get into a conventional car, then that might negate them being able to come in a host car, but there might be other ways of getting them there. But the host will go out and pick up his or her clients for the day. So it feels like you're going out with friends. So the host comes, the host is the same person, known to the family, known to that, if somebody's living alone, that's that person that they may not remember the name, but there will be a sense of familiarity, of regularity, repetition. Those things are really important. And so say somebody comes on a Tuesday, the host will pick up on a Tuesday. It's the same host and takes them back to their home. And what we try and do is maximize those windows of respite that also are a byproduct of the days that we provide. So if we know that there's a carer who's really struggling, then we'll try and pick up that client first, maximize the window of respite. And a lot of people love the journey because we shouldn't always judge on our by our own standards, which is perhaps I could say I spend far too long in the car. For some people who never go out or never aren't allowed to drive anymore, can't drive anymore, to go out and have a journey is a lovely thing to do. And even if it's pouring with rain, it's quite interesting. And we see the seasons. You know, we live in Devon, and we support in Devon, Somerset, Cornwall, Lancashire, and people enjoy getting to see the scenery, see the daffodils in February, you know, or the magnolias out and the whatever. It's lovely. And so everybody, we're piled back to the host's home. And what do you do when you've got friends around? You put the kettle on. And that's always the starting place. And you might sit around a kitchen table having a cup of coffee, some biscuits, and it's collaborative. So it's very much care not being done to. So the people who come for our clients, our guests, our beneficiaries, whatever you like to say, they will be part of determining what's going to happen that day. And that's based on what they can do still, their preferences, their capacities and their personalities. Those are the key three ingredients. And the day will unravel accordingly. So we're not activity led. We're slightly allergic to that, a script that is one size fits all, because somebody might have a dementia, but also have sensory loss. So they may have macular disease and not be able to see something that's being done. You know, they can't see that to join in. They might have hearing impairments, so they can't hear to do certain things. So we try and make, you know, each group will be different to another group. So it'll unravel separately. And lunch is a huge part of it, because many people don't have that joy of breaking bread with one another. And what we do sitting around a table, what do we do with our friends and family? You know, we put the world to rights, we have good banter, we chat, And it's amazing what happens over a meal table, I think, often. And that can be collaborative. People like to help. Just because somebody can't do a great deal anymore, you know, a farmer's wife might have been preparing food for 55 years, can still enjoy peeling the carrots and podding, you know, the broad beans or whatever, and being a part of something again. And we find that this involvement, and it's significant that it isn't care done to, it's care done with, is hugely valuable. And then, you know, after lunch, sit down and banter again, conversation. It's the conversation that's incredibly important, because that is what brings people back from being isolated. It's being talked to, human connection in real time.
Yeah, you know, the care done with thing, I think, is so important, because, you know, I go back to my environment with the Alzheimer's Society. It was very much, we will provide the entertainment. And it was quite obvious, having 18 people in the room, that there are certain people that think, oh, this is brilliant. Other people think, what is going on? And other people think, I don't like this at all. So, you know, with a small group, you have the ability to actually, you know, we had guys who want to talk about football. We had ladies who want to talk about this. And put 18 people in the room, it's a nightmare. But, you know, you put four people in a nice, conducive environment, it must be so, so much better.
It is. And the thing is, it works. I mean, this is the key. We know it works because we built up from 9 years ago. I was the host. I was running two groups. And we now have just shy of 100 groups running a week. And we employ 93 people, I think. So we've able to, the ripple effect has been huge. We're not postcode defined, so we can go wherever there's a need, we will go. There are groups that, as long as we've got the right people applying to work with us, and we never seem to have a shortage of people coming forward, which is wonderful. We will go where, so we work again quite collaboratively with the organisations that are, you know, statutory and otherwise, who know where they want us to go. So that's been a really interesting journey, actually.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
The station that makes you feel good.
This is the D Word podcast. I'm looking back on some of the highlights of 2023. Just because you have a diagnosis, it doesn't mean you have to stop doing the things you love, and indeed trying new activities. Sport is a great example, whether it's taking part or reminiscing about the past. Something Keith McIntosh from the Sporting Memories Network explained back in March, as well as introducing me to the joys of drumming.
And golf, like table tennis, has proven to be a very positive, proactive activity, sport, for people to take part in whilst they are living with these conditions. So we've set this up recently. It's been launched at Leyland Golf Club, and the feedback from England Golf and the Alzheimer's Society has been fantastic. And their aim is to encourage other golf clubs to follow suit, and to particularly to welcome back former members who stopped playing and gave up their membership 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 plus years ago, and bring them back and reunite them with some of their friends who they used to play with or play against in certain cases. Some of the stories that come out at the golfing memory sessions. So we just, it's a sporting memory session, but particularly it's based at a golf club, and it's golf themed. So the memorabilia will be golf themed. The stories and memories from speakers will be golf themed. But then you leave time, talking tables, refreshments. That's the quality time when they share their personal stories. And to hear two old boys sat in the corner saying, correct, if you go outside and have a look on that winners list, champions board, you'll see my name's there in such a date. And that's when I actually played against you in a grand final and I beat you by one shot. And they sat next to each other at this golfing memory session and they're pointing to the name on the board, the date, the time. Pete, it's amazing. They can actually remember how well they played and what their score was to win the tournament or the championship. And I'm thinking, where has that come from? And then there's the banter and the wind-up that goes with it. That is the positive power of sporting golfing memories, reminiscence. I love it. But to be in the company of those people who can share their memories and tell their stories and memories of the best course that they've ever played on or visited, or the best score that they ever played and shot in a competition. And they can remember the detail, the weather, the conditions, the points, the scores. Amazing. And that is what really makes it work a treat. So that's golfing memories, which is an extension of sporting memories.
Yeah, I think, you know, it just goes to prove what we were saying earlier in the conversation, how strong those sporting links and sporting memories are. I mean, in your sessions, have you come across any sort of minority sports and sort of, you know, out of the mainstream a little bit of the football, rugby, kind of cricket world?
The other sport and activity that I'm involved with, again, it's all dementia, Parkinson's friendly, and it's an extension of everything else that we're involved with, or connected with. It's called table tennis therapy. So table tennis, again, research has shown that playing table tennis can be a very positive, proactive sport for people who are living with neurological conditions. And table tennis therapy for dementia, Parkinson's in particular, has proven to be. So Parkinson's UK, Parkinson's Scotland are now working in partnership with Table Tennis England to offer up ping pong Parkinson's or Parkinson's table tennis friendly sessions at table tennis clubs around the country to welcome people in. And we run a monthly session on Saturday mornings. This Saturday morning, we will have five tables on the go at our local church hall. I will have volunteer coaches and friends who buddy up and support, and maybe 10 to 12 people, ladies and gents who are living with Parkinson's, will come along and they'll play table tennis. They'll walk up to the table with the tremor. They'll walk up to the table with a frozen leg, one of the Parkinson's conditions. As soon as they get ready to play, they put a bat in their hand, it's rock solid. And to see people who have never played table tennis for 20, 30, 40 plus years, last time they played ping pong was in a youth club. And I'm talking about one gentleman who's joined us recently, and he's 82, and he's not played table tennis, it was in the youth club. So he said, then his wife said, but didn't you used to play in the local table tennis leagues? Oh, yes, yeah, I think I did. All right, and didn't you used to actually play at a county level? Oh, yes, yeah. Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, I've not played this since I was a young lad in the youth club. Within 10 minutes of having a tap, carefully supervised for mobility and safety, he was spinning them, back serves, top spin, the lot. It came back a treat, Pete. To him, he was back at the youth club. His wife actually told us about his journey up to county level and then coaching. It's fantastic, fantastic. So that's table tennis therapy for people living with dementia, Parkinson's, and similar conditions, but those two in particular. So that's, again, you know, sport, leisure and music, hence drumming for dementia. And that's a new initiative that I've been involved with. I've been a keen drummer, a social drummer, since, well, for 60 years plus. And following on from the fantastic Children in Need Drumathon that took place back in 2021 with the amazing and inspirational Owain Wynne Evans, I put two and two together. I thought, well, you know, their charity that they were involved with, Children in Need, were supporting children with autism who have benefited through drumming, percussion, and it's had a positive effect. And then I did a little bit of research and I found out that there is a network of drummers supported by the Clem Burke Project, backed up by two universities to give it credibility to the research, that they were moving then into the field of neurological conditions, Parkinson's, dementia in particular. I thought, well, I'll combine my interest in drumming with dementia care support and being a dementia friend. So we set up monthly drumming for dementia groups. So this Saturday morning, alongside the table tennis in one room, in another room, there'll be half a dozen people there playing along on practice pads and snare drums with quiet pads on, because you've got to be mindful about the volume levels when you're actually playing along to strong music with beats like We Will Rock You. And we always finish with Simply the Best by Tina Turner, because it's a rocking song. The drumming routines about it are absolutely brilliant. And to see the joy that it brings to the participants, and the wives and daughters are there having a cup of tea in the corner, watching the joy and the excitement and the happiness that it brings to them.
When I started the D Word on UK Health Radio in 2019, I really had no clue how long it would last. At the time, I would have been delighted to have presented 50 shows. So when we reached 200 in October, it was an incredible moment. When I'd first searched for dementia-based radio, the one show I found was Alzheimer's Speaks, presented by Laurie LeBay. I'm so pleased that since then, Laurie and I have become friends. And when it came to celebrating D Word 200, there was only one name on my guest list. Having started back in 2009, Laurie has spoken to so many interesting people, but as she admitted, there are plenty more still out there.
Oh, there's a ton. And, you know, I think one of the things that's neat, and one of my goals when I started, was to be inclusive of all people, not only all around the world, but at all ages and stages and abilities. I didn't want to just be academic medical model, because that's kind of all there was back in 2009 and before. People weren't hearing from the people who were diagnosed or the people that were actually caring for them. And again, they're the ones in the trenches with the everyday experience. They're the ones seeing how this can be improved and what will work. And it's fascinating to, you know, have everything from a young child who's gotten involved in doing a project for school or for a grandparent or whatever, to having researchers, to having musicians that are writing music and people who are writing plays and movies. And, you know, again, all those various types of businesses that people don't even know exist. They have maybe a handful of them. They know about home health care and they know about housing, but they don't know about all the middle stuff that's out there and how so much of this stuff doesn't have to be in their backyard in order to help them. And again, so many people start their business or their advocacy because they've been touched. So it comes from this, to me, really grounded, heartfelt place that's authentic. And to me, that was missing, you know, before 2009, was that authenticity.
And it seems to me, I mean, I talked to a lot of researchers And I've got to say, first of all, I was a little bit, you know, these are really highly educated, brilliant people. And I was a little bit, you know, who am I, just a guy behind the microphone. But the more researchers I talk to, a lot of them say to me that it's great to have something like this or something like you've got, because really they do a lot of great work, but it disappears into a journal that's read by all their peers. And one of the big problems is actually getting that message out to the listeners.
Well, and it has to be told in everyday language, you know, because a lot of people, they don't have access to those journals because they're usually paid subscriptions for that. You have to belong to the club type deal. And there's been a few researchers I've had where, you know, I have to have them dumb it down. I'm like, you're talking over my head, and I'm probably a little bit more educated than some of my audience is. But it's like, let's talk in everyday language, and you can use your acronyms, but tell us what they are, because I think as professionals, and I'm not just picking on researchers, but anybody who's in a certain industry, we get used to our own, our own lingo and what we speak, and we just think everyone knows it, and everyone doesn't. But it's so important for people to have choice and hear what's going on, again, at all levels.
I think also, you know, in terms of the, if I can call it a product, you know, what we produce, I've always, right at the beginning, I had people saying, well, can you send me an in-depth list of questions that you want to ask me? And I've said, hey, no, the whole idea of this is to really portray, as we are, two friends having a chat. And sometimes that seems to disarm people that I speak to as well, that they expect the very formal approach as opposed to the, you know, the cozy chat.
Yeah. I think, again, having that authentic conversation, it's easier to listen to and you don't feel you're being pitched. You know, I still, with my show, I ask people for 5 talking points and we go down that, but we go off and we have a conversation and it's funny because people do get really nervous to be on the show. And I always tell them, it's like talking to a friend. You know, I'm probably going to screw up and make a flub, or, you know, we're going to go off and I'm going to tell a story and then you're going to tell a story and I'll get us back on track. Cause that's what friends do, you know, but it's an honest thing. And all those little stories, all those little things that happen, that's real life. That's how we talk with one another. That's what makes us comfortable. It's not a sales pitch. It's just an opportunity to learn. And so much, I think, from what I've learned, so much of dementia is applicable in so many other areas of one's life. You know, if it's philosophy, if it's products, if it's services, you know, care is care at a basic core. And even just learning how research is done and the process they have to go through is important. And how people can help by getting involved in that is another huge, huge piece if we're going to find a cure.
And, you know, do you think we are opening that door, as it were, because dementia has been surrounded by stigma and, you know, probably even when I started, you know, mention the word and you see people turn off, don't want to talk about that, whatever. And as you say, I think, you know, the big thing is to open the door and say, hey, this is like anything else.
Yeah, it really is. I was talking with Dementia Action Alliance yesterday and we did a show specific for people with dementia, and they were asking about stigmas and advocacy. And I tell them all the time, you know, they are the most powerful voice out of all of us because they break the stigma and people say, I would have never known. You know, this is an invisible disease from the outside. You know, it's not like a broken arm or something like that. And so it does disarm people because I think because for so long, marketing has been pushed by fear. And I like to believe that we are pushing it forward by hope.
I think that's a brilliant message. And I know probably one of the first things I read on your website was to shift dementia care from crisis to comfort. around the world by giving everybody a voice. That sort of sentence really resonated with me, and I thought, you know, that's what we should be doing.
Yeah, it's a lonely disease, and you know, the only way that we're going to be able to give comfort is if we make a comfortable environment for people to talk and tell us what their needs are. Otherwise, we're never going to know. And then we're just like dogs chasing our tails. You know, we're busy, but we're not getting anywhere. We're not getting anything done. So let's work together. Let's collaborate. Let's not always have to feel like we have to do it ourselves or recreate the wheel. You know, lift someone else up who's doing a great job and then work on something else, because there's a lot of holes in the cheese that need to be filled, you know, as people with living with dementia say.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
This is the D Word podcast, and I'm looking back on some of the highlights of the year. The World Alzheimer's Report 2023 focused on risk reduction, and it was a great pleasure to welcome Wendy Weidner from Alzheimer's Disease International, who had worked on the report, to the show to talk about the report itself and also what governments can do to implement its recommendations.
Well, I think the thing that we keep talking about is there's a couple of things. One is that, you know, we know that numbers of people living with dementia is on the increase. You know, we know that there are currently over 50 million and that, you know, in 2050, there are going to be, you know, over 139 million. So we know those numbers are going up. And we also know that they're going up, they're going to be going up more in the global south, actually. And that is a pandemic in itself. If you think about it, you know, it's huge. And so that's going to cost governments a lot of money. So they need to think about what's the sort of what's ahead of them. And equally, they, you know, all member states and WHO committed in 2017, they unanimously committed to this global action plan on dementia. And they said, you know, look, we say that 75% of us are going to have a national dementia plan that's going to sort of plan in each of our countries how we're going to focus on, you know, getting people a timely diagnosis and getting them treatment and care, and a pathway that they can follow if and when they receive a diagnosis. So they've committed to that, you know, so that's an obligation. And that's why we have the FUM Plan to Impact report that I mentioned earlier that sort of keeps track. And if governments do not have a plan, because we have relations with WHO, we can actually, as an organization, write directly as a non-state actor. We can write directly to governments and say, you know, look, you have this many people living with dementia in your country right now. It's expected to go up this much. What are you going to do about it? You've got to, you know, where is your plan? So we have to, as an advocacy organization, we need to keep that pressure up. But equally, there is evidence that when you put these risk reduction behaviors and practices in place, incidence and prevalence of dementia starts to decrease. And this is what we've seen in places like the US and the UK, that some of these measures can actually start to decrease dementia, risks of dementia. It's like, I think we have an example in the report about when they did the work with taking salt out of the diet and how that brought blood pressure down, and blood pressure then has an impact on cardiovascular. So, I mean, these things are sort of cost-effective ways that you can actually start to reduce some of the risk. And then that has a snowball effect, doesn't it? If you have fewer people developing these conditions, you have less pressure on health systems, et cetera. So we sort of try to advocate as responsibility with if governments have made this commitment equally, that it's a cost-effective way for governments to plan out how they're going to, you know, keep their populations healthier. So
I guess, you know, there are so many commonalities as well, that there are payoffs in other areas, because, you know, not only reducing dementia risk, you're reducing cardiovascular risk, you're reducing obesity, etc. So, you know, it is a whole thing to surely sit there and say, well, it's not only us that's saying this, it's all these people over here as well.
Exactly. And you know, we've seen through some of the studies that have been done that, just as you say, when you put these risk reduction efforts in place for individuals, it reduces their risk for all sorts of chronic disease, not just dementia, you know. So, it's overall a very good choice for governments. And this is why we also made a call in the recommendations that, you know, they should really have robust risk reduction parts of their national plans, because it's such a low-hanging fruit, really, for a government to put into a plan. Because, you know, there are 7 key action areas that WHO recommends that they put in a national plan. So things like getting people access to a good diagnosis and access to good post-diagnostic care, and raising awareness and challenging stigma, and research and support for carers. But risk reduction is one of those areas, and it's something that's, like we've been saying, could be quite cost effective. And so it's a good thing to put in your national plan.
Thanks to Libby, Keith, Laurie and Wendy, and all the amazing guests I was lucky enough to chat to during 2023. Well, that's it for this edition. Hope you enjoyed it, and you'll join me again soon for another D Word podcast.
Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.